You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Omkari Williams, and we're talking about microactivism. Talking about activism, I know in the introduction of the book, some people think of activism in a way that's really, you know, out there marching. And I know you have a little parent without a bullhorn, you know, that not everybody's going to be the one in front of a big crowd and being active. You really hold activism in a different way. I'd love for you to say something about that.
Yeah, you know, I think that people forget that activism and the word action have the same root. It's simply about doing something, right? If everyone who was an activist was on the stage, who would be behind the stage helping get things done? I think of it this way. Dr. King spoke at the march in Washington, and he was standing there in front of the Lincoln Memorial. And there were all of those people below him around the reflecting pool, right? If there hadn't been all of those people, 100,000 plus people below him, he would have been a tourist at the Lincoln Memorial.
Yes, yes.
It was because of those people who had come from all over the country that event became what it was. So there, yes, you had Dr. King, who was the speaker and the main presence, but every single person who was there was an activist in their own way.
And also, the call for people to be there came from all sorts of organizations and people who helped to organize that and helped to spread the word and to get people to actually transportation to get there.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes, that was an enormous amount. It wasn't just that he said, okay, I'm going to be here and y'all
not
show
at
up.
All. No, it was a massive organizational effort on so many levels. I mean, I have friends whose parents met at that march. And you know, they came down on the bus, one of the buses, one of the many, many buses that left from New York City. And this was true across the country.
Wow.
Was there were people who organized each little piece of it so that people could get there, so that this impact could be made, that people could see how important this effort was to white people and black people and brown people and Native American people. They, you know, everyone was welcome. Everyone was welcome. And it was huge. I mean, and there were also people who did way behind the scenes things, like making sure that people had lists of restaurants that they could go to and helping organize places for people to stay. And I mean, there was so much that went into that. And that's the truth behind any big social movement. But we typically only focus on the person in front of the scenes and forget about all of the people behind the scenes. But without all of those people behind the scenes, nothing would happen.
Exactly. And this just takes me also to something that you write about and talk about, and that's looking at the legacy we're leaving, and you remind us that the cathedrals in Europe and the Mayan temples, endeavors to build them took generations. So the people who started them knew that they wouldn't see them finished. And I'm going to quote someone from your book. You have sprinkled throughout your book stories from different activists. And this is from Jessica Hesse from Greenfield, Massachusetts. And her focus is on prison abolition. And she writes, I love Maria May Cabe's quote, hope is a discipline. And then she goes on to say, it helps me to remember that even if my lifetime never sees the end of incarceration, it's important to celebrate small victories and to keep striving for what so many radical activists have been putting their lives on the line for. I just love that. And I love it that she mentions it's important to celebrate. And that's something that you also advocate, that we may not make huge strides in our participation, might be in small increments, but it's important to stop and once in a while and say, wow, look at what we just did, no matter how small. I'd love for you to comment on that.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that happens to us, particularly in this society, is we feel like we only get to celebrate big accomplishments. And it's not that big accomplishments are not meritorious of celebration. Yes, of course they are, absolutely. But I think that we shortchange ourselves when we don't celebrate the small wins as well, because the small wins are what keep us going on the path to the bigger wins. So, yeah, okay, if Jess's thing is prison abolition, but there are small wins along the way. You know, there was the First Step Act, which shockingly enough was signed by Donald Trump and released something like 30,000 people from prison who had committed nonviolent drug offenses, mostly for, you know, pot, which is now legal and practically everywhere. It didn't get to the goal of abolishing prisons, but there are 30,000 people who are home. We get to celebrate that.
Yes.
And we get to celebrate all the little steps along the way that moved us towards that accomplishment, which I actually think is a huge accomplishment. But there were, a bunch of tiny steps, and we need to pay attention to those because those do keep us going.
You know, it reminds me, and some of our listeners know I've mentioned this before on New Dimensions. It's a quote from William McDonough, who is a visionary architect and who co-authored the book Cradle to Cradle, Remaking the Way We Make Things. And he said to Michael and I, as we were sitting on his porch one day, he said, it's not about the survival of the fittest. It's about those who celebrate the most being the true evolutionary winners. And then he followed that by saying, nature is all about fierce celebration.
That's beautiful.
I love that, to remind us that, yeah, life is about celebration. As we work for social change and social justice and all the different aspects of the work that we're doing. And this reminds me of how when we do find a group, and I must say, when I looked at my focus, because you helped me to focus on, okay, what will my one focus be? And so I did go on the internet, and I just made this huge list of all the organizations in my area. And I thought, wow, that's huge. And to start to hone in on which one I might do, which one I might just check out, and I may check out more than one, but just to find my group, my tribe, so to speak. And in doing that, in any group work, there will inevitably be some conflict. You know, there'll be some microaggressions that take place, you know, as we become more aware and more conscious human beings, and more aware of how we might offend others or how to live together more peacefully. And, you know, Omkari, there's something that I just love this. When you talked about this, you talked about rather than calling someone out, saying, okay, I'm going to call you out on that. You say, no, let's call someone in.
Yeah.
Oh, what a different
Yes.
Vibration that is. Say, oh, please talk about that.
You know, I think that it's really important to remember our own experience of being shamed, because we've all had an experience of being shamed, and what that does to us when we have that experience, how it shuts us down. And so then when someone does something that we disagree with or hurts us in some way, the way to resolve that is not to shame them, because people who are shamed don't hear very well. It's very, very difficult to hear what someone is saying if you're in a state of shame. So rather than saying to someone, you're a horrible person, I don't know what made you think that that was an okay thing to say, there's a way to have the conversation that still communicates your feelings about whatever occurred without making it this thing that the other person is a bad human. I don't believe that we should be in groups where everybody thinks exactly what we think about everything, because I think that's a cult, not a community. So when the inevitable happens and someone either steps on our feelings or someone says something that is offensive to us in some way, we have to have a way of communicating that that does not make the split wider. And part of that is, I think, letting go of our need to be right and being more interested in our need to have communication keep happening. So if I say to someone, I know you to be someone who is a kind person, but what you just said was hurtful to me, can we talk about that? That's a different place to approach someone from than, wow, what a jerky thing to say, right? One opens up the possibility of a conversation and one shuts it down. And we don't need to be shutting down conversations in this world. We're already barely hearing one another. We need to be opening up those avenues.
And it's all a matter of the viewpoint of asking people to belong together rather than being separate, like a, you know, in-group, out-group. No, it's like inviting people. I'm participating in this group. I'd love for you to consider belonging to it too. The word inclusion. And that was interesting what you said about that, because inherent, you said inherent in that word is a kind of ownership of membership. I'm going to include you in my, no, it's, I'm going to ask you to belong with me. So I want to tell our listeners, I'm here with Kari L. Williams. She's the author of Microactivism, How You Can Make a Difference in the World. She also does a podcast called Stepping Into Truth, where she interviews many activists from all walks of life. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Oh, vous appelle à vous appelle votre nous. Oh, vous appelle à vous appelle votre nous. Vous appelle à vous appelle votre nous. Vous appelle à vous appelle votre nous. Oh, vous appelle vous appelle votre nous. I'm here with Omkari L. Williams, and we're talking about microactivism. And I loved it when you mentioned your paternal grandmother in the book. And I just loved it. You're never too old to be an activist. You're never too old. And so describe, she was 101 years old, and what was she doing?
Yeah, Georgiana, she was quite the character. She died 1 week before her 102nd birthday. And up until the week before she died, she was out there working to get better food for people who were, for elderly people who are in assisted living and senior facilities in New York City, because she herself, we had moved her into one when she was around 96 over her strenuous objections. It's like, I'm sorry, Grandma, but you're 96. You really can't be living alone anymore. And she came to really love it because she loved the community, but she hated the food. So she petitioned the mayor of New York and got on this committee. And she and other senior citizens went around and they, you know, had conversations about the food in these homes and making sure that they had better food for people who were living there. And I was so proud of her. I mean, she was a tiny little thing. She was like 5'1" tall, and she was just a tiny itty bitty little thing, but she was fierce.
Fierce.
And you did not want to cross her.
Oh, that's great. So I'm reminded of a dear friend of mine, Anzi Stevens, who is now 94. And I just this past summer traveled with her and was her roommate in Chicago at the Parliament of World's Religions. And just, she is my mentor. She really is. She is my model for good eldership. And she, at this point, is unable to drive. She's been forced against her will, but it's no longer safe to drive. And her training has been in facilitating groups in conflict. And she is very, very good at it. What she said, we meet, she's in one of my circles also, and we meet monthly. And just this past week in our monthly call, our Zoom session, she said, well, I can't drive anymore and I can't go around, but you know, I just volunteered to be a listener. And I am now on a list that if anybody needs witnessing and deep listening, I'm available. And I, you know,
I love that.
Isn't that wonderful? Just,
yeah.
We, again, it goes back to, okay, what can we do with our health issues and with our
yes.
time issues, and what else can we do? And I find this really great. And going into like her work as facilitating groups, I'm thinking either we find a group or we start a group. But whatever we do, one of your suggestions is to be really clear about the commitment, to really lay out exactly what are the parameters of this group. Can you say something about what's useful there?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that's important in groups is for people to not overcommit. And I think when, especially when people are starting a group, there's that new thing energy, that new shiny object energy that will lead us sometimes to make commitments that are not actually in line with who we are. So I think it's really important in groups to have a role that is your role, know what it is. You can always stretch beyond it, but you know, if you are by nature really someone who does not like to be forward facing in projects, who wants to be way behind the scenes, then signing yourself up for roles that are going to demand that you're out in public all the time is probably not your best idea. Stay with your strengths. And you, as I said, you can always build more. But if people stay with their real natural abilities, then the group has time to develop and people have time to find out who they are without the group sort of splintering because things aren't getting done because people made commitments that are too hard for them to maintain.
Right.
So again, it's that sort of start small and let yourself build. Start with the micro things rather than starting with the idea that I can do it all because none of us can do it all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Also, to go along with that is to know really carefully to know what you're committing to. Like, how often are we going to meet?
Yes. Very important.
What is the length of the meeting going to be? Where are we going to meet? You know, online or face-to-face, or is it going to be both? Yeah, you know. And so those sorts of things are very important, I think, as well.
Yes, being very clear, as much clarity as you can possibly bring to things. I always think that a good way of going into something like that is to say, okay, how many questions about how we're going to do this can we come up with? Just come up with a whole bunch of questions, because the questions will lead to a different kind of thinking and will lead to answers and structures that you might not otherwise think of, because we're all going to come at it from different perspectives. So your questions and my questions are going to be different. But if we have a whole bunch of them, we're going to wind up with a better opening structure, because we're incorporating the concerns and the ideas of the entire group right from the outset.
Exactly. And I'm thinking in that group setting, just knowing the circle work that I do and have been doing for many, many years, and I was so glad to see that you mentioned this in your writing, that it's really good to have a check-in to allow and to call into the circle the quiet voices.
Yes.
You know, because they may not be speaking up, but they may have just wonderful ideas. And if we could encourage those voices to come forward and to give them time for that.
I think it's really important to do that. You know, I mean, you've been doing this work a long time, Justine, so you understand how there are just always going to be some people who are sitting there and they are deep thinkers, but they're not necessarily going to volunteer to speak. So space needs to be made to elicit their input, to elicit their wisdom. And there are ways of doing that that are not, you know, like, oh, you over there, it's your turn, you must speak, because that's not ideal or fair even. But there are ways of creating a space where you say to the whole group, here's where we are. And are there ideas we haven't heard that you feel we should hear? And give people an opportunity to express their thoughts in that way. Because most people, if you say, do you have an idea about something, and they do have an idea, will then give you an answer, even if they wouldn't necessarily volunteer it on their own because they're just not that type of person. So very intentionally creating space and not shoving people into it, but welcoming people into it.
So I get from all of this that we've talked about in the last hour that microactivism is about narrowing your focus, knowing what it is within your own life energy that you can devote to it, get with another group of people. It's more enlivening to do it with others than just, and it's more than just doing a click on a Facebook, oh, I like this. It's more than that. You're talking about something that's a little more action. You talk about deep work and shallow work. And the deep work is what we're really going for. And maybe we could end with some thought or comment about that.
Yeah, deep work. I define deep work as work that actually moves the needle on whatever it is that you're engaged in. So it may just move the needle one tiny degree, but it still moves the needle. You know, there's nothing wrong with liking posts on Facebook or Instagram, but does it actually change something? And generally speaking, the answer is no. Sometimes it can, because there's such a wave of support for an idea. But generally speaking, we have to take more tangible action than just a like on something. We have to actually get ourselves into the work in a hands-on way. So deep work is work that you can look at and say, that actually made a little difference, and I can see that here. And we always know the difference between deep and shallow work, if we're being honest. It doesn't have to be changing the whole world all at once, but it does require that we make more of an effort to participate in the work in an active, conscious, intentional way.
I want to thank you so much, Omkari, for being with us today. I've been speaking with Omkari Williams, and she's the author of Microactivism, How You Can Make a Difference in the World Without a Bullhorn, Small Actions Equal Big Results. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, omkariwilliams.com. She spells her first name Omkari, omkariwilliams.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3804.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You, too, can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the Donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Richard Schwartz, author of No Bad Parts. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about healing trauma and restoring wholeness with the internal family systems model.
Dear listeners, as you may have heard, Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook, is blocking Canadian access to all content created by news providers, including this radio station, in response to the Online Broadcasting Act. Access to local news and information matters to everyone, and while radio stations use their airwaves to keep you informed, we also use social media to share local news, events, and initiatives, and even content about our upcoming programming. We need you to write your MP and convey your concerns. Learn more and find a letter template for your MP on our website. Thank you for your support.
This is